Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your favorite podcast. This is realestateinvestormba.com. We created Real Estate Investor MBA to leverage the knowledge of giants through synthesizing and providing much needed information to all investors, from the veteran investor to the new and aspiring investor. At Real Estate Investor MBA, we plan to cover pertinent information head on with our expert guests, who we will interview on what they are doing and preparing for in the days and years ahead. We aim to create MBA quality curriculum topics and themes from the information garnered among our interviewed guests in order to bring world-class value to our fellow community of listeners. We truly believe that rising water raises all ships. And by sharing this leveraged knowledge, we can create a stronger online community, which translates to stronger local, regional, and national communities. Your hosts are Jeremy Moyer, who is a veteran real estate investor and author of a new book called Are You Playing the Real Estate Game Blind? As well as Tejas Gosai, the owner of eXp Realty, the Tejas Gosai team, and also co-manager in a newly formed Regulation D private equity fund called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. Now let's get to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Real Estate Investor MBA. It's your favorite real estate podcast based here in the Lehigh Valley. This is my partner, Jeremy Moyer, and we really love what we're doing here. We both love real estate. We spend a lot of time and our market has been growing rapidly. So it's wonderful to get people who are from different markets and different areas to talk with us about what's happening. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Facebook. We have a great website that we just redid. Our YouTube channel is already done. So please check it out. And thank you guys. Jeremy, let's bring on the guest.
Absolutely. So I'm excited to announce our guest today, Yosef Lee. Yosef is a believer, father, lawyer, multifamily apartment syndicator and investor, people connector, status quo hater, strategic planner action taker, a Pilates studio owner, and an entrepreneur wannabe. He has envisioned to take back the control of his time through financial freedom. He started his journey of acquiring cash-flowing multifamily apartments as a tool to create generational wealth and to achieve financial freedom. Along this journey, he would love to make changes in other people's lives and empower them to live their lives on their own terms. Yosef, thanks so much for your time this afternoon and joining to talk with us.
Thank you very much, guys, for having me here. I'm very excited.
Definitely. So before we jump into a bunch of questions, I have a lot that I want to get through. Can you just tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself and how you got started in multifamily?
Sure. So how I started. So I went to law school with a dream of going up on the corporate ladder, right, in an international agency, and maybe someday like a cool, wealthy professional. So I went to law school. I pulled it really hard because I was working full-time while I was in law school. And I went to law school at night. And at the time, I had two of my daughters were born during my law school. So I had to work. That's why I was working full-time, just to support the family too. And then just fast forward after all these nights and weekends studying and working, 2013, I took New York and New Jersey bar and passed them once and became a lawyer. Right. Yeah. And I thank you. And I was like, yoo-hoo, now finally I'm a lawyer. Fast forward 2018, I was still hustling, working hours and hours, but was nowhere close to financially free. Don't get me wrong, I still love my job and you know, I like what I do, but it's just that each year, you know, I work harder and harder. But the less time you get, because you got to work harder because that's what you do. Basically, you're trading your time with money. So if you want to make more money, equally, you got to put more hours. So one day, I grabbed this book again. I read it before, like years ago, but I wasn't really serious. But I grabbed this book again. It's called Rich Dad and Poor Dad from Robert Kiyosaki. And sure, everyone knows that. And then I read it thoroughly again. And I finally realized, you know, I'm one of the Reds, right? I'm trapped in the rat race as a W employee, regardless of how much money you make. And then, you know, I realized certain facts, like for the first 3 or 4 months of each year, essentially I'm working for free for the government through the paying taxes. And also as an employee, you know, I'll be continue to trade my time with money. So obviously this is like a tunnel without a light at the end. So that's when I concluded, okay, I got to do something. I got to either start my own business or become an investor. So around 2019, I was doing a little bit of like REITs, stock and bonds and all that, but I finally landed on multifamily apartment investing because of the benefits that the investing actually yields to the investors. And yep, that's your end. That's how I got my fin into it.
That's great. I love the story. We talked for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of investors, that's how I started, but a lot of investors I talk to, they typically buy a single family or a duplex or a fourplex, and that's kind of how they tiptoe into real estate. Man, you jumped right into some big apartments, which I thought is awesome. You kind of had exactly what you wanted to go after, and you went and did it. So I kind of want to dive into that. Like, what did you have to do to accomplish that? I mean, what relationships did you have to build? You know, what partners did you have to have on your team? And what was your mindset to jump right into it? And then also, what markets are you in? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that question has a lot in it. So I'm going to try to hit points one by one. If I miss anything, please let me know. So first of all, I had this limiting beliefs. It's like there's no way I can invest out of my backyard because I live in New York, right? And how can I trust others? You know, you need a lot of money to start, or I just start small, maybe like single or duplex before going to big multifamily. So how I crushed those limiting beliefs one by one, I started as educating myself with the right strategy. So I was all after cash flow, passive income building up. But in New York, as you already know, it's an appreciation market. There's not much cash flow to go after. And it's like an institutional money play. It's really expensive. So I started looking out of state, a little bit further away, New Jersey and Connecticut and Pennsylvania. However, as I look at further away from the state, the more I was convinced that it's not like I'm going to go there every day anyway, even with New Jersey right next to my state. So if I have to go further, I'll just go wherever the number makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I started looking the whole picture differently. And I started looking into Southeast area or Tennessee, Georgia and Kentucky, around that. And I decided in my mind, okay, I think this is, because the number looked really good in terms of cash flow as opposed to the entry price. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to be out-of-state investor. And that tells me, okay, now I need to find a boots-on-the-ground partner. So that was the initial goal of my multifamily journey. And I didn't go to single duplex or turnkey short-term rental, because mainly at the time I was listening to Michael Plank's podcast. I remember he was talking about his story as he used to be single family flipper before coming into a big multifamily game. And he was very successful. He made a lot of money. But after he came to multifamily sector, the brokers and lenders, no one really took his experience seriously because he was not a multifamily guy. So he said, looking back, he could have just jumped right into the multifamily and start right there. So I heard that. And then I was listening to Grant Cardone, who's been saying, don't even bother looking at below 16 units, right? Mm-hmm. And back then, I didn't really know much. So I just took their advice as is. So that became, I think, my goal. Okay, I think I got to go at least bigger than 10 or 12 units. These big guys are saying that, so I could do it. So that's how I crushed my limiting beliefs of gotta go small before going to be multi.
What was your first multifamily? What market? How many units? Can you share that?
Sure. Yeah. So my first deal is in Lawrence, Kansas City, Kansas, and it's a 44 unit apartment. So
did
I had no experience whatsoever. 44. So
44. Okay, that was your first deal.
That was my first deal ever. I never had a single flip or anything.
That's great.
And I was just excited to be able to tackle that, but I couldn't do it myself, obviously. So what I did was I started as a self-education stage. So I was listening to the podcast, reading all the books, all that, and going to the bigger pockets, just like everyone does. And, you know, just being sort of like multifamily guy, sort of, right? Wannabe, because I didn't have any units under my belt. I was a little ashamed to even call myself as a multifamily investor in the beginning, because I didn't have any. How can I call myself a multifamily investor? But, you know, I tried my best. As you know, it's not rocket science. It's not like hard material to digest. So I studied for the first like 3-4 months. I realized that doing a self-education is not equivalent to taking any actions, because I was just passively observing the information, doing really nothing. Like, I wouldn't call that thing like analysis paralysis.
Yes.
Right? So I think that's where I hit. So I decided seriously to join one of the mastermind groups out there. And that's, I started vetting some of the groups, and then I joined Jake and Gino. Back in 2020, late February or early March, that's when I joined Jake and Gino. And ever since I joined the group, and then I also joined MIH Mastermind. So these two groups, I started networking and consuming the like real education stuff step by step with the coaches and all that. I met all my partners through that group. And that was the first deal I landed. My goal was to close my first deal in 2020, which happened in December 2020. So I was really happy.
That's great. I often hear, Yosef, that, you know, the commercial real estate multifamily is more of a we sport versus a me sport, which you might hear on like the singles or twoplexes, that side of investing. So you mentioned a team right there. Could you walk us through kind of like a timeline of that purchase of the 44 units? Was there anybody local, boots on the ground, that was on your team, or like, what does that look like? How did you find it? What did the due diligence look like? And then the close.
Okay. Yeah. So a little bit of, about the property. So before then I had three core team members. One is from Kansas, so he's our boots on the ground partner, and myself. And we have another partner from California who has a little bit of more experience than both me and boots on the ground partner. So we are the core team members. We started vetting and underwriting deals maybe from like April or May, I think. And we did about 30, 40 underwritings before finding this apartment deal. It was through a friend of the Kansas Boots on the Ground partner. He directly knew the owner, so it was a direct owner deal, and we didn't really have to compete with anybody. And the owner was so motivated, like mom and pop owned property. He's been owning this property for long, and he wanted to get rid of it. So he was very motivated. His condition was, you should close in 2020. So we negotiated, and we got the property under contract in September of 2020. And the entire process was not that any hiccups. It was just it was kind of smooth, because I think most of the part, the seller was motivated, and we went through the community bank as opposed to agency. So it was, I think, easier to deal with together. So this is 4 unit apartment. 1963 vintage in Lawrence, Kansas. And like I said, sell a direct off-market deal from September. We close in December.
How about occupancy? Did you have any issues, you know, buying in the year of COVID? Do you have a property management company?
So at that time, when we looked at P12, interestingly, historic data tells us that this apartment had overall over 90% economic occupancy, even throughout the COVID. So it was great property, about $150 to $200 below market rent compared to other properties nearby. And even there was another property that's exactly mirror image property. I think what had happened in the beginning was the developer had 88 unit apartment complex, and then he probably sold it to two different owners. So the other property is exactly mirror image, and their rent, average rent, is about $200 more than this property that we acquired.
Those are great comps.
Those are great comps. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So what, December, ever since we took over, we actually turned about 4 units by now. And one unit, we didn't do anything. We were able to raise $50 rent, I think $60 rent, doing nothing, like just renew the lease. And then we did soft turn, and then we raised $150 for that. And then we had hard renovation, just, you know, paint and luxury vinyl plank, and then replacing the door, we raised $300. We were able to kind of test the market that actually $150 to $200 rent bump is very possible in this market.
That's great. So the overall business plan then, Yosef, for this is to renovate unit by unit, and then do the rent bump across the building. How long do you guys anticipate that to take?
So we're actually projecting about a year and a half to do all the renovations and to cash out refi with about 80% of them, so that we could pull out all the money in and then just keep it with infinite return.
Wait, did you buy it with cash?
No, we bought it. We had a 20% down and 20%. It was a loan to cost, 80% loan to cost. So the lender came up with 80% of the purchase price and 80% of the rehab price, rehab reserve.
Bravo.
Tremendous.
It is. So I did, like, I love this calculation. So if we raise about $160, I really like to do the calculation quickly. So if I do $150 times 44, it's a 6,600 rent bump per month. And times 12 is 79,200. And consider this area at least minimum 7 cap. So if do 7 cap, So it's about $1 million. It's seven. I tried to do 7 cap or 8 cap. So it's about $1 million. We just not doing nothing, just by raising the rent, we created the equity, forced the appreciation. And if we add like saving from more efficient management, it will probably add some more. So a 75%, 80% cash out refi will get us all the money that we put in, and then we'll just keep it.
I got to ask. So it's, I mean, you said you went through like 30, 40, but probably went through hundreds of properties to get to the underwriting, to get to where you are now. Are you hitting your projections? Is it going better than you thought? How did it pan out since purchase?
This 43 unit. It's like I said, we already turned about 4 units, and we were able to raise as even more.
Was that a part of your business plan before buying it?
Yes. Well, as we analyzed the deal, yes, it was part of our business plan.
I guess I'm trying to say, you know, a lot of people that are afraid to get into this business, you know, they don't trust every number or every, you know, demographic metric and things like that. You do have to take a leap of faith. And, you know, you're a good example of somebody that put a plan together and it's working. And I have a lot of clients, a lot of colleagues that it does work out for. It is every now and then you hear about something crazy or roof caving in or something tragic, but you know, you do your due diligence, and I'm sure you guys did a lot of due diligence. You had a good closing time frame there.
Yes, yes. And funny thing is, when we do due diligence, it came up with you know, like the mold issues, mildew and termite plumbing. So we asked the seller to fix it before closing, which he did. And then we found the roof and HVAC system were very old because it's 1963. And seller was not really putting much into the property. So what's been very old, the roof and HVAC system was very old. So we asked him to fix it. He refused. Instead, he gave us $100,000 credit for that at the closing. So it was even better.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. I think the cost to fix everything will probably come up with $70,000 or $80,000. So we got more probably than what we think we should. But again, going back to your question about the market and taking the business, executing the business plans, I think it's critical to have a team member who is a boots on the ground, who's in the local market, who knows the market, and to execute the business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, our team has one. So,
do you mind just kind of going over the different role types in your perspective? That you need on a successful team to execute?
Sure. Well, yeah. Again, first of all, this is purely my personal perspective. So
yeah.
People might think differently. I think the good team has about 4 or 5 functions in it. So local point person, like boots on the ground partner, underwriter, capital raiser, someone who has more experience than others, at least one. And then so that we could oversee the entire process. So I'll say, and good asset manager. So I think these 5 roles are there in a team. It could be shared. It doesn't have to be 5 people, I think. It could be shared between among three or four people. But at least one person has to take the main role and then share the other maybe until the team are fully stabilized. So you got to find a partner who can fill up that role. But for to do that, what do you have to do? You got to know what you're at, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of role can you take and what kind of value can you add to the team? Because you don't want 2 Jeremy in one team, right? So I think I remember I told you what I did was in the beginning was to sit down and did some exercise, writing down like what I'm good at, right? What do I like to do? What do I hate to do? But what do I need to learn? So just write down. And it's really different to just think about it and actually writing it down, because it's a lot harder to come up with a concrete idea when you write it down. And you will find quickly that you're really not determined yet as to take certain roles. So I really recommend to go through that exercise if you're actually a beginner, and then try to fit yourself into one of the roles, like mold yourself into the role that you have the most passion about, and then find the partners who can fill up the other roles. So I call those 5 functions like a core role, core partnerships, and then the ancillary or secondary partnership could be, you know, loan guarantor or additional capital raiser, depends on your deal size, right? And then so on and so forth.
I got a question about the future. Now that you've nailed, you know, your process, your technique, it's 2021. You just like, you know, went from 0 to 60. What's your plans now that you have some, you know, weight under your belt? You're going to go after a bigger property. You know, what's your plans?
So after closing that 43 unit in December, in March last month, we closed a 68 unit syndication. So that was syndication. The first one was JV. So I was lucky enough to have been experiencing both JV structure and syndication structure in about a year or so, as after I seriously started the real estate journey and I learned ton. And now, as managing these 2 properties, I'm learning a lot about operating side and how to, you know, manage the property managers and how to lead the meetings and all that. So I'm having a lot of fun learning that site.
It's funny too, because you're like, you know, after I got 100 units, I started to learn a lot.
Right. Because I think this is what's going on in the real estate side of market when it comes to becoming a multifamily investor. I see a lot of the trend. I see a lot of people are focusing on acquisition side of the business. They like how to talk to the brokers, how to talk to lenders, how to underwrite the deals and all that. And those meetups and those educational contents are all geared toward probably 90%, if not 99%, acquisition part. But to me, once you acquire the property, like for the next 5-7 years, you're stuck with the property. I think even more important thing is to learn how to rightly asset manage it, right? And how to make it performing in accordance to your business plan. But not many people are focusing that side of the learning, but more of acquisition side. So that's why I said I'm having a lot of fun, because I was heavily focused on the acquisition side. Now I'm learning a lot more for operation side. And that's why it's important to have at least one member who's more experienced, because now we could get scale. Advice from that partner.
That's awesome. Jeremy, you got any last remarks?
Sure. Yeah. I always like to ask this question, Yosef. So, like, you know, what daily habits do you keep, you know, that kind of keep you at your top of your game, just so you can continue executing at a high level?
I will say to the list, I'm like obsessed to that level. I'm obsessed to executing or changing or upgrading my to-do list. I have daily and weekly and monthly and yearly, and I'm creating the 50-year like to-do list now too. I mean, it's very vague, but I'm at least trying it just to see what I can do with that. But constantly I check to the list, updated, and making sure things are done and moving around. I guess that's what keeps me going and productive daily.
Mm-hmm.
And at least once, either early morning or late at night, I will just make sure there are 3 or 4 things that are really important, because I have a list of to-do lists. So it's really not possible to get the to-do list done a day. And I know for sure that's not happening. So I need to prioritize even in that prioritized list items. Does that make sense to you?
It does, yeah.
So I think that's a constant updating of to-do list is what I do. And secondly, once you have a good enough plan, I try to execute it. I can't wait for the perfect timing or perfect plan is built up, because sometimes it's just too late. I'm more like, if it's good, it looks good enough to me, I have the sense, then I'll start pushing it and executing it as I go. If I have to pivot, I'll pivot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, action is very important instead of...
That's very important. Very important.
Absolutely. And in your bio, Yosef, you mentioned about, you know, helping others along the way. You know, I thought that was really a great mission and goal of that empowerment. Can you give us some examples of how you'd like to give back and help out?
Sure. So, for example, I wrote about how I tackled the first deal in pickpockets.com, just to share my limiting beliefs, how I crushed it and what happened and where I am now and what my visions and goals are. After that, about 200 people sent me a message, private message or comments. So they were telling me that they were very inspired, and, you know, somebody even told me that he was kind of down and in this game, but now he's trying to get back on his feet and he's more inspired and move on. I think that reading those comments really like pure joy for me. So I love it. That's what keeps me going too. And after I connected with some of them, I actually had one-on-one meeting with them through Zoom, like about 40 of them. And then I still maintain good relationship with about a handful of 25 of them.
Wow.
And anytime they can text me, asking me questions, you know, I'll open to answer. So when I said I want to make a change in life, it's more like I think that's something that has to happen to me first. I want to be a better person like every day or every time than yesterday. And then I want to make the same changes to others so that they can become the better version of themselves. Like every time they try something, I want to be like some sort of support.
Right. Is that an analogy I've heard before? If you're just 1% better every day, right, what would you be at the end of the year?
So yes, right, that's right.
Changes, yeah.
Absolutely.
So, okay. In closing, can you tell the listeners like how they can get in touch with you if they have any questions, if they want to follow up with you, follow you on social media?
Sure. I'm very active in social media. I try to be. And my social media handle is Yosef Yobrosef. So it's Y-O-S-F. You like that, right?
Yes.
Your Brosef, B-R-O-S-E-F. And for Facebook, LinkedIn, Insta, it's all same. So you could just type it in and find me and send me a text. I'd love to get connected. I'd love to hop on a Zoom call and share what I learned and share what I'm going through and become friends. So please reach out to me.
Thank you. It's awesome. Awesome. So Yosef, you're amazing. This will be on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Jeremy, where else are we on?
I think we're on Google, we're on TuneIn, iHeartRadio. Yeah.
Yes. But we're having a really good time, and we literally created this program for people like Yosef to come on and share and spread the love. So thank you for that. That's Jeremy Moyer. I'm Tejas Gosai. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. We'll catch you guys next time. Cheers.
Thank you.